Forgive them freely, fully, instantly, unconditionally. Just forgive them. But if you don't, whatever modifications you make in that measure, son, you know, when you say, oh, yeah, I can't do it freely, fully, instantly, unconditionally, I'm going to add a few things because they just, you know, I don't want. Whatever I add to it, modify it, then God says, okay, good, but I'm going to use that one on you now. I gave you the measure I wanted you to use, but if you choose to use a different measure, that's fine, but I'm going to use that one on you. There's a scripture in Proverbs 20, verse 10, that says this, differing weights and differing measures are abomination to the Lord. All it means is that the measure that you want, if it differs from the measure that you give, then God says it's an abomination. But can I tell you, God's going to get a balanced measure? Either you align your measure with his, or he's going to align his with yours. How many of you know I can't afford him aligning his with mine? So if I understand that, it modifies all my behavior. But also blessing, good things will return. I want to read this to you, Luke 6, 31 through 38, out of the Message, because it pretty much sums up everything that I just said. It says, don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. Don't condemn those who are down. That hardness can boomerang. That's what it says out of the Message. Be easy on people and you'll find life a lot easier. Give away your life and you'll find life given back. But not merely given back with bonus and blessing. Giving, not getting, is the way. Generosity begots generosity. That's what Luke says. If you understand this concept, then it modifies all your behavior. You sit there, and I've trained myself, can I live with this? Can I live with this coming back? And if I can't, then I'm not going to give it. But if in my anger I give it, I'm going to show you what you can do with a bad seed once it's gone. You can get it back. Look at somebody and say, you can get a bad seed back. Don't you hate that when someone asks you to do that? You feel so uncomfortable in doing that. Second law, and this is the thing, the second law of sowing and reaping is there's always a waiting period between when you sow and when you reap. That's the second law. And this is where deception can get in. Because you are either deceived in continuing sinful behavior because there's no immediate consequences, or you're deceived in discontinuing righteous behavior because there are no immediate benefits. Let me explain what I mean by that. Up until I was 14 years old, I was the all-American boy. I was president of sophomore class. I was college bound in that I was wanting to go to college. I was a honor roll student. I lettered in three sports. But when I was 14, my life took a dramatic turn through a lot of events that I won't bring into now, but I stopped being that all-American boy. Where I always told the truth, I now start lying. I cheat. I go up into my bedroom, sneak out the window, stay out all night. I begin to drink. I begin to do drugs. And I got deceived because in the midst of that, I'd been sowing good seed all my life. Now I'm sowing bad seed. I'm lying, I'm stealing, I'm cheating, I'm doing drugs. But I'm continuing to eat the good fruit of the seed that I had sown for 14 years. What I mean by that is my parents gave me the benefit of the doubt. For a good year, they just could not believe the things that they found out, or they were in denial, overlooked them. I mean, what kind of parent, when they find a pond of marijuana in your drawer and you say, oh, Mom, that's not mine, I'm just holding it for a friend, they go, okay. And the reason why they say okay is because they've never known me to lie. They've never known me to cheat and steal. So when that happens, because there's no immediate consequences, then you're thinking, whoa, there's not going to be any consequences. In fact, that's what Ecclesiastes 8:11 says. It says, because the sentence of a crime isn't quickly carried out, the people's heart are given fully to do that evil. because nothing immediately happened to me, I was deceived into thinking nothing was going to happen to me. Though the sentence isn't quickly carried out, it is always, always, ultimately carried out. And so I started in behavior, but somewhere along the line, my bad seeds then started producing a bitter crop for me. So much so that I deteriorated. Nobody in my family would have to do with me. I was kicked out of every store in Mount Washington. Nobody could stand being around me. And finally, in 1972, in a drug-related deal, I ended up being responsible for someone's life. And I finally was reduced to someone I couldn't be around. I wanted to end my life, and God sent somebody over to share Jesus with me, and actually my life began. But I went into the system, and though I had to, I found out that if you face what you've done, your consequence, God is able to do two things in the consequences: minimize the damage and maximize the good. But this is a difficult thing. I'm in prison. I'm now sowing good seed. I am. I'm nice to people. I'm obedient to the guards. I'm no longer rebellion. I'm growing out of these things. I'm sowing good seed, but I have to continue to eat the bitter fruit of the seed that I sown before. This is where deception, because there's no immediate benefits, you want to discontinue righteous behavior. When I got out after 8 years, and I drove up to see my dad. He wouldn't even let me into his house. He met me in a bar where for 5 minutes he told me how much he hated me and how I hurt him and all my brothers, and he wanted to have nothing to do with me, and then he'd storm out of the bar. I traveled 1,200 miles just to see him. I mean, you know, that's some good seed. I pleaded with him. You know, I had wrote him while I was in prison. He never wrote me back. I mean, you know, that's good seed. Always remembered his birthday. That's good seed. After 8 years, I'm out. You know, I'm going to Bible school. I'm sowing good seed, reaping bitter fruit. I mean, you can get weary in doing good. There comes a point in that where you want to faint. You just want to say, I had it. 7 years, drove up every year, 1,200 miles, once a year. 6 years, but on the same thing. And I wanted to quit, and I heard God speak to me one time, because I said, this is it, Lord. I'm not exposing myself to this kind of pain and agony anymore. I mean, God, I've been out now. I'm a minister. I just got married. When I got married, 3 years out of prison, nobody in my family came to my wedding, not one person. I'm an associate pastor. I mean, you know, I've been sowing some great seed. Continue to eat the bitter fruit. But it says, don't get weary. Don't faint. Due season. So I kept sowing. On my seventh year up there, actually my grandmother died. His mom, and they didn't know who to ask. And I was the only minister they knew, and so they asked me to do the funeral, and it was the way that I honored my grandmother that caused my dad afterwards to come up. We reconciled, and then he moved to Florida, and we were the best friends until 2001. He moved there in 1987, and in 2001, he passed on, but he became a Christian, you know. But I reaped. I sowed, and it's a tough thing. And I want to tell you, church, it's a tough, tough thing to sow good seed while you continue to eat the bitter fruit of the seed you sown before. But don't get weary. Don't quit. Don't faint. Same way with my brothers. It took me 18 years to get my oldest brother to speak to me. He's my best friend. He's a Christian. 19 years old to get my next brother to speak to me. He's my best friend. He's not a Christian yet, but I'm still holding out for him. My younger brother, 25 years it took him before he would talk to me. 25 years of sowing good seed, eating bitter fruit. But he's one of my best friends, and he's a Christian. I could tell you a lot of things, but what I want to tell you is that there's a waiting period. But if you sow good seed, I promise you, somewhere in the process, you will reap a good, good crop. A great crop. But here's a benefit of that waiting period. There's a waiting period. Because there's a waiting period, you have a window of opportunity to get a bad seed back. I mean, you can in anger or frustration, sow a bad seed, but 2 days later you come to your senses, you repent, go get it back. Go apologize. Go man up or woman up, whichever one it is, and get the seed back. Apologize. Say, man, can I get that? I can't live with that, what that's going to produce. It's going to produce a crop, and I can't live. Can I get it back? I was stupid. I was angry. Let me give you just a couple quick examples. This past year, I started playing softball with the church that I attend, New Life, and I'm the pitcher, and I pitched fairly well, and we were in a game, and this older guy came up. He was probably the oldest guy. He was probably in his early 70s. Kind of frail looking, and he's up the bat, and I wasn't doing too well in the game, and I thought I could strike this dude out. So I don't even try to put any kind of stuff on it, because you know he's old, he ain't gonna swing, or if he does, it's not gonna be. So I'm just trying to put it over the plate, and I drop four balls right over the plate, and each time the ump said, "Ball." Yeah, so I throw it again. It drops right over. I mean, my catcher's looking at me. He goes, "Ball." You know, third one, ball. Fourth one, ball. Take your base. And my catcher goes, "What was it?" He's like, "What was that about?" And I said, "Oh, that's what you call a mercy call." And the ref said, "What'd you say?" I said, "Well, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to my catcher." He said, "What did you say?" I said, "Well, I said that was a mercy call." And he said, "Well, you can't say that." I said, "Well, here's what we'll do. Next time he gets up, we'll just let him go down. How about that?" He says, "You say one more word, you're out of here." And so, when you say stuff like that for a moment, it feels good. I mean, it does. You know, that was clever. You know, people on my team laughed. Oh, you know. But I was making fun of an ump who wanted to give an older man some compassion. He wanted to make his day. He wanted that older man to go home and say, "I got on base." I made fun of it. I was thinking about me. I was thinking, man, I look bad. At least I could strike this dude out. I look good for that. And then I disrespected authority. Not only did I make fun of him, I made fun of the ump. People laughed because of my cleverness at this ump. Man, I don't want that. I don't want people making. That can't boomerang back on me. So the next week, man, I'm right there. I get there early, a wait thing, and I come up. I said, "Sir, I am so sorry." I said, "I know what you were doing. You were just trying to honor this man. I don't know if he was a friend, but it doesn't matter. You're right. Letting him on the base was the right thing to do. And would you forgive me for my rebellion, my disrespect?" And he said, "Yeah, I will." I got my seed back. It didn't have time to root out, you know, and produce a crop for me where I run and people make fun of my good things and disrespect my authority. I don't want that. One of the things I do as part of being outward focused is I go to a bar every Wednesday night. They have all you can drink beer and pizza for $10. I don't go for the beer or the pizza. I go because there's a lot of guys there. But this bar, it had a volleyball league. So I joined. You know, they needed an extra player. You know, there's six on it. You know, they have a thing. So I joined the volleyball league. And the people on my team, they speak fluent profanity. I mean, that's their first language. It really is. It's their first language. But I had a great time with them. And I have one of the guys coming to church. He's not a Christian yet. He's just intrigued by everything. But he's coming to church. But anyway, one of the first times I came out of there, I was all sweaty. And I try to look younger, so I had my hat on backwards, you know. And I had a hoodie on, you know. And I was trying to look like. And I got into my car, you know, and I have a fairly nice car, and this cop started following me from the bar. Now, he probably thought I was a young kid driving this nice car. He must be a drug dealer. He followed me the 17 miles home. So I saw him as soon as he followed me. I decide I need to grab a gallon of milk for my wife, so I pull into the convenience store. As soon as I pull in, he pulls in, he puts his lights on. And so he comes over to the window, and he looks, and he sees I'm an older guy now. I guess my face, you know, my hat, but anyway. So he looks at me, and he's a little startled. I said, "Why'd you pull me over?" He said, "I'll tell you why." He said, "I've been following you for 7 miles." I said, "I know, I've been watching." He said, "Well, you went on this where it's 45, you went 52 miles per hour in that." I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Yes, you did." I said, "Well, can you show me the readout that shows that?" He said, "You'll see it in court." I said, "There's a surprise." And he says, "You're a wise guy, aren't you?" I said, "Well, I'm not any more of a wise guy than you're an unjust cop." And I'm sorry, it's my nature. he says, "Well," he writes me a ticket. And then when he gives me the ticket, he goes, "Have a nice day." I said, "Have a nice day. You just pulled me over for no good reason at all. I'm going to have to pay $100 and some for a ticket. And you're going to tell me to have a nice day?" I said, I would say something to you, but I'm not going to. I said, "But I will tell you this, you're a jerk." And I got out of my car and I went into the convenience store. Again, I felt a little good about saying all that stuff. But I got home and the Spirit of God came on me. And I mean, law enforcement have tough jobs. All right, he might have been trying to, you know, make up for something he thought. But I had no reason. I had to find somebody. I had to get my seed back. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what city, what the cop car was, and we have a cop that goes to our thing, and I asked him if he could find out who this guy is, and we were able to locate him, and then I went with this police, Mark Waltner, in our church with him, and we met with him, and I got my seed back. I apologized. I said, "Sir, I don't know why I was that way. I still don't think I had a ticket, but that's regardless. I don't think I spit, but if you said I didn't, then I must believe that I did." And I said, "I apologize. You guys do a great job. I reap the benefits on a daily basis because of how hard you work. Would you please forgive me?" And he did. I got my seed back. That's the great thing about law, sowing and reaping. You can sow bad seed, which we all do, but you can get it back. You can get it back. Man, then you can get some good crops. You can get some ponies.